Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Brought to you by Capital One, where you can open a savings account in about 5 minutes and earn five times the national average. Just imagine, five times more savings toward that overdue home addition, maybe even an addition on that addition. This is Banking Reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One, NA member FDIC.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Jackie Leonard, and in the early hours of Wednesday, the 4th of March, these are our main stories. An emergency interest rate cut in the US because of the economic risks posed by the new coronavirus. Tens of thousands of prisoners have been temporarily freed from Iranian jails to help stop the spread of the disease. And Democrats in 14 states have been choosing who they want to take on Donald Trump in November's election. Also in this podcast, scientists in Australia develop ways to predict where the next bushfires might start and how to stop criminals from gaining access to baby monitors. As the number of coronavirus infections grows, it's having an impact on world economies. On Tuesday, both Australia and Malaysia cut interest rates as a result of the outbreak, while finance ministers from the G7 group of nations pledged to use all appropriate policy tools to tackle the economic impact of the coronavirus. And the US central bank, the Federal Reserve, has also slashed its interest rates. The chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, said it was difficult to predict what impact the virus would have.
The virus and the measures that are being taken to contain it will surely weigh on economic activity, both here and abroad, for some time. The magnitude and persistence of the overall effects on the economy, however, remain highly uncertain, and the situation remains a fluid one. Against this background, the committee judged that the risks to the U.S. outlook have changed materially. In response, we have eased the stance of monetary policy to provide some more support to the economy.
Samira Hussain is our business reporter based in New York.
It's pretty significant. It is very rare for the Federal Reserve to make these kinds of emergency rate cuts. To put it into context, the last time we saw anything like this, it was back in 2007, 2008, during the U.S. financial crisis when the American housing market collapsed and the U.S. was eventually pushed into its worst recession since the Great Depression. And previous to that, the other time that we saw this kind of emergency rate cut, it was shortly after the September 11th terrorist attacks. So this really did take markets by surprise, especially given the sort of more upbeat comments we heard from the Federal Reserve just on Friday.
Okay, so it took markets by surprise. How have they responded?
In fact, if you look at the way markets are trading now, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, I'm looking at it right now, and with every moment that we speak, it drops even further. And now we've seen that the Dow has dropped 900 points after the Fed had cut its interest rates. To give you a sense, earlier in the day, we saw that actually was even trading higher by about 300 points.
That was Samira Hussain in New York. The Iranian authorities have decided that the best way to prevent the spread of the coronavirus in its overcrowded jails is to release more than 50,000 prisoners. The measure is only a temporary one. There's been a sharp increase in the number of infected people, more than 2,300 so far, among them several senior officials. So is this a sign that the virus is becoming a real problem in prisons? Rana Rahimpour works for BBC Persian.
Probably is, because we have been receiving unconfirmed reports of cases of the coronavirus in several prisons in Iran, although the officials have denied all these reports. But the fact that they have now decided to send these people on a limited short period leave, as they call it, suggests that the reports of cases in prisons is probably true.
And as you say, it's a temporary measure. How long do we expect them to be out? What are they going to be able to do? Are they going to have to go back? Are they going to have to self-isolate?
They haven't talked about any self-isolation. They said that all the prisoners have tested negative, which is a bit suspicious because before they were saying that they didn't have enough test kits. So for Iran to have the capacity of test 54,000 prisoners is very unlikely. But they claim that they're all clear of the virus. They haven't announced any self-isolation, and we don't know how long they will be able to stay out. It depends on the situation in the country. And in the past, each individual, depending on their crime, could get different periods of leave.
And what is the situation in the country? The numbers of cases are going up, aren't they?
The numbers of cases have gone up by 55% today. So it's now over 2,300 cases. Unlike the previous days, they didn't explain which provinces, but it seems that it's across the country. And there are at least 77 deaths reported. But this is very different from the reports that we're receiving from several cities and towns in Iran. Today, one of the MPs said that these numbers are far from the truth, and it sounds that the number must be much higher.
What are you hearing from inside Iran about how people are dealing with it?
Many people are very aware of what's going on, and I think a large part of the Iranian society is careful and very worried. And many of the reports where when we hear, and we try to sometimes calm people down, remind them that the death rate is only 2% according to the statistics. But they say it's not about the death rate. It's about the fact that they don't seem the Iranian politicians competent and capable of dealing with a crisis as serious as this.
That was Rana Rahimpour of BBC Persian. As we were coming into the podcast studio, voting had just ended in the eastern states in the race for the Democratic nomination for the White House, but polling stations will remain open for a few hours more out in the west, including California. Our correspondent, Gary O'Donoghue, explained just how important Tuesday's voting was.
Well, in terms of the delegate count, which is the measure of success on these days, how many people do you get to back you that will go to the convention in July and vote for you to be the nominee? In terms of the delegate count, it's worth a third. There's a third up for grabs today, so that's an awful lot. And if you, to get slightly nerdy for a moment, if you get into the way the Democratic primary works, it's a proportional system. So each state you go to, you get a proportion depending on various factors of the delegates available. So if you can build up a big lead on delegates from Super Tuesday, then it's actually very hard for people to catch you, to overtake you, because you're constantly adding to your delegates. They're adding to theirs, but they're just not getting enough to overhaul you if you've developed a lead.
And are there any particular states that we should be watching?
Watch California, for sure. That's a huge state, the biggest state in the union, of course, 40 million people. It's got more than 400 delegates up for grabs today. Bernie Sanders polling very strong there. Joe Biden wanted to make sure he gets a share of that huge haul. Same in Texas, more than 200 available there. And also in little places here, like I'm in North Carolina, it's the third largest delegate haul up for grabs on Super Tuesday. And it's also a very, very marginal state in terms of the general election. It's the sixth closest state when it came to 2016 presidential election. So be interested to see here what Democrat voters go for, knowing that they will want to choose someone who can beat Donald Trump in the fall. So that will give you an indication of the way they're kind of thinking in terms of casting ahead to the general election.
That was Gary O'Donoghue. And I imagine there will be a lot more on the Super Tuesday results in the next edition of the Global News podcast. Almost certainly. Now, with most of the votes counted in Israel, the country's longest-serving Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, has claimed victory, even though, as we record this podcast, his right-wing bloc is still two seats short of an overall majority. With his analysis of the results, here's our Middle East editor, Jeremy Bowen, who's in Tel Aviv.
Even Israelis who dislike Benjamin Netanyahu's style and substance are acknowledging his political skill, his ability to mobilize his loyalists, as well as the waverers whose votes decide close elections. To those who encouraged the opposition leader, Benny Gantz, to enter politics, he must have seemed a perfect candidate. He'd been Israel's top general and was reassuringly tough on security for Israelis. He welcomed President Trump's so-called deal of the century, his controversial proposals to end the conflict with the Palestinians on Israel's terms. But Mr. Netanyahu outdid him on guile, ruthlessness and charisma. Mr. Gantz's blue and white alliance failed to weaponize Mr. Netanyahu's trial in a fortnight from now on corruption charges. Benjamin Netanyahu's opponents fear he will attack and undermine the judicial system to gain immunity from prosecution. He'll also take the slimmest majority as a mandate for his agenda. That includes the annexation of parts of the occupied West Bank that Palestinians want for a future state. Annexation was a centerpiece of Donald Trump's proposals. It all adds up to a hammer blow for those who still believe peace can come from the creation of a Palestinian state alongside Israel. Senior Palestinians have called the Trump proposals a plan for war, not peace.
That was Jeremy Bowen in Tel Aviv. A Mexican YouTuber has been sentenced to 50 years in prison for his role in kidnapping a woman and holding her for ransom. John Johnson has more details.
Germán Abraham Loera Acosta had described himself as a full-time entrepreneur. But now, he and five other men have been given long jail terms for kidnapping the 33-year-old lawyer. She was held captive in a house rented by Acosta in February last year, while the group demanded a ransom of more than $100,000 in bitcoins. Police rescued her 2 days after she was taken. Acosta had previously given speeches on marketing and business, including at the World Congress of Young Leaders for Peace.
That was John Johnson. Still to come in this podcast.
We pick conditions that favour the locust movement, favour locust reproduction, and we compute that from our supercomputers, and that's how we're able to foretell where the locust is going.
A supercomputer predicting swarms of locusts. The Russian President Vladimir Putin has proposed several constitutional amendments that will be put to a nationwide referendum in late April. They include defining marriage as the union of a man and a woman, which would rule out gay marriage. Liza Vogt is a reporter for BBC Russian in Moscow.
The Kremlin wants a high turnout for the vote on the changes to give them popular legitimacy. So the new constitution is trying to do that by appealing to different sectors of society. Some of the changes are aimed at social conservatives, of course, like the mention of God and the definition of marriage as between a man and a woman. And those measures were, in fact, proposed by the Russian Orthodox Church. So others are aimed at people who miss Soviet-style social stability. This is the first time welfare guarantees have been written into the Constitution. There's also nostalgia for the famously atheist Soviet Union in new references to the Second World War. That might seem to go against the references to God, but what's important is that this changes contain something for everyone and will motivate Russians to go out and vote for them. There's even a line saying Russia's great asset is its children, and who doesn't like children? In terms of traditional marriage and LGBT harassment and God, well, it's hard to imagine that many people will speak up against it. At least we've not seen any, major protests regarding the constitutional changes so far. And while most Russians identify themselves as Orthodox Christians, the state is officially secular, though. There are also many Muslims in Russia. The conservative Islamic views are commonly shared by people from the North Caucasus. And it's very unlikely that many Russians will be against mentioning God in the constitution or against defining marriage as between a man and a woman.
Liza Vogt from BBC Russian in Moscow. Countries in East Africa are racing against time to prevent new swarms of locusts after the worst infestation in generations. Now a brand new weather supercomputer is being used to track and predict the insects' movements. Our Africa correspondent Anne Soy went to see how weather patterns are being used to track the swarms.
I've come to the Eastern African Climate Center just outside Nairobi, and Kenneth Mwangi is the scientist behind this. I can see a big screen on his desk with a map of Eastern Africa. I can see some red spots, and is that wind direction with the blue arrows showing where the wind is blowing?
Desert locust forecasted movement or projected movement for the desert locust.
That's really fascinating. So you're able to monitor where the locusts will move to next.
Yeah, we monitor current invasions, where the invasions have been happening, where the egg laying has been happening, and then we focus most likely movement in the next 10 days, in the next 1 month.
How do you do that?
We do that by combining satellite data that looks at the current conditions, and we combine that with climate data that is forecasting data, and we pick conditions that are favor the locust movement, favor locust reproduction, and we compute that from our supercomputers that we have here, and that's how we're able to foretell where the locust is going.
I can see the map of Eastern Africa on your computer, so we have more intense colors.
Those are likelihoods of spread for the locusts. So we are seeing orange, and to the red means very high, and high likelihood to very high likelihood. That means that the conditions, climatic conditions, are very suitable for locusts to move to those areas. And we do these maps every about 10 days.
And I can see there are also black boxes, many of them over Kenya, along the Red Sea farther north in Eritrea and Sudan.
So wherever you see, it's a reported place, and you can see very high density in Kenya, high density in Somalia and Ethiopia. The first spotted areas were in the coast of Sudan, coast of Eritrea. That was where the locusts moved from when they came from the Arab Peninsula.
We tried going to look for the locust swarms, and it was really difficult to trace them. They were changing direction really fast, I'm told, because the wind changed direction. Mm-hmm. How are you able to know where they are and place them on the map?
As you're saying, it's a bit difficult sometimes to model their exact behavior. So what we do is general behavior and general movement. In one area, they might be moving from one locality to another based on the winds, based on the looking for food, looking for places to lay eggs. But generally, in a span of about 2 or 3 weeks, they'll be moving in a certain direction. And that's what we're able to catch the longer term.
How can you tell where they are?
We rely a lot on our field monitors. We have field monitors in partnerships with the ministries of agriculture, partnership with international organizations that give reports on desert locust infested areas. And we use that now to predict the next movements.
Kenneth Mwangi was talking to Anne Soy in Nairobi. And from plagues of locusts to catastrophic fire. The Australian bushfires in December and January were utterly devastating. But now local scientists have come up with a way to predict where fires are likely to start and which ones will be difficult to contain. Our science correspondent Jonathan Amos explains how it would work.
Their big idea is to have a bespoke satellite for Australia. As you said, we've come through this rather remarkable bushfire season. Something like 20% of Australia's forest area was affected by those fires. And they need to be able to assess going forward which areas may be prone to fires. And you do that by studying the forest to look at their structure, to look at the amount of litter that might be on the ground that can fuel those fires. They call it the fuel load. And you can do that from space. You know, you can have detectors that will look at the forests. You can see whether they're stressed or not. You can see how many leaves that there might be in the canopy. And then you can put that into your assessments and into your models as well. Now, they do this already with satellites that are up there. What the Australian scientists, and this is the Australian National University in Canberra, are saying is that if we had a system that was bespoke to our country, we could do it better. Now, what's bespoke about Australia? It is the eucalyptus trees. You know, something like 3/4 of Australia's forests are eucalypts. It's an extraordinary number. And they have a very particular way that they shine in the light that bounces back off the surface of the earth. The sunlight, when it comes down, it bounces back up. And if you can detect the specific spectral bands that we describe them as, then you can say much more about what those forests are like, and then you can feed that into the information that goes into the process of mitigation and preventing these forest fires in the future. But they hope that many of these projects, these types of projects, will now come out of the country, and they won't be so reliant in the future on other people's assets in orbit.
That was Jonathan Amos. And staying in Australia, the country's only news agency, the AAP, has announced it's closing down after more than 80 years because of a drop in subscribers. 180 journalists, photographers and videographers will lose their jobs in June. AAP's chief executive officer, Bruce Davidson, said the company's business model had suffered from the amount of free content now available online.
This decision's been made with very heavy hearts. that's been made on an economic and financial basis. We've seen a lot of cutbacks, closures, reduction in news coverage by the traditional media companies across Australia, across the rest of the world.
The AAP was established in 1935 by Keith Murdoch, the father of the media magnate Rupert Murdoch. It currently makes more than 500 stories a day available to newspapers and broadcasters. Now, it's a story that's been attracting a good deal of attention concerning smart cameras and baby monitors and how criminals can access them over the internet. Here's our cybersecurity reporter, Joe Tidy.
Well, it's not exactly a new problem. This is an ongoing issue, but the National Cybersecurity Centre in the UK have decided to alert the consumers, alert the public to this ongoing threat, and that is of hackers potentially gaining access to the live feeds of your cameras, whether that's a smart sort of Ring camera, if you like, or lots of other brands out there, of course, but that seems to be the market leader, or a baby monitor. There is a way for these hackers to get hold of the live feed and potentially watch you or your children in your home.
And would that be, I know that's pretty bad, but is that as bad as it gets, that the hackers would be able, I suppose then, I mean, well, it opens up a load of questions, doesn't it, what they might do with being able to see?
Yeah, you might think, so what? You know, if they can watch my baby sleeping, so what? But there have been cases. And there's not a lot of truth behind these, but there certainly are. There's some urban myths, but then there are some that you think actually there could be some truth behind that, where these hackers are pranksters, basically, and they can talk through the baby monitors. So, for example, a baby monitor I've got at home allows me to talk to my baby so that I can, you know, give them soothing words or whatever. There have been cases where parents have claimed that they've heard voices speaking to children through the baby monitors. And that, of course, is way more serious and potentially troubling.
And freak the parents and perhaps the baby out as well. Is there a way to stop it, or what is, I suppose, the UK Cyber Defender, which is the National Cyber Security Centre, what are they alerting people to or advising them to do?
Well, they're giving the same advice that all cybersecurity companies and sort of experts have been giving for years now, which is when you get your devices, you buy them on the internet or whatever from a shop, the first thing you should do is set it up, obviously, but you need to check the passwords, because quite often they come with what's called default passwords, which means that they are really, really easy to guess. For example, four zeros or admin.
ABC123.
Exactly, you've got it. Yeah, so there's a list that hackers have of the default passwords for hundreds of thousands of devices, particularly the cheaper devices that are being sold. And what they can do is they can basically run a program on the internet that looks for these cameras that are unprotected and then looks at whether or not they can get access to the live feeds with these default passwords. And there are entire websites on the internet devoted to just this. I was looking at one earlier. I watched a guy doing his gardening. You know, these people have unprotected cameras and they don't know that hackers are able to do this. And it is very, very easy. But there are lots of things you can do to stop it.
Like?
For example, you have to go through the manual, the user manual for your device, and go through the protocols that are offered inside there. It's much easier when you've got one of the modern cameras, which is linked to a phone app. One of the ones that allows you to, for example, watch your pets while you're at work from your mobile phone. Those ones will allow you to change the password in a very simple way. With the older devices, it's a little bit more tricky. There's advice, as I say, in the manuals, but generally speaking, you have to find out the IP address of the device, which again should be fairly easy to find in the manual or perhaps in the actual device itself. And then you need to go on the internet and work out how you can change the password for that. Or, as I do, switch them off when you don't want people looking.
Just read the manual or hire Mary Poppins or something. That was Joe Tidy and he was talking to Nuala McGovern. Now, before I let you go, let me tell you about another BBC podcast which will take you right through this election year in the US. It's called Americast and it is presented by John Sopel, Anthony Zerker and Emily Maitlis.
Interest and excitement with the race, which is really easy to have, I think. There's something about American politics, and it's not just all the balloons that fall from the ceiling, but something pulls you in because everything sounds larger than life. Everything sounds more exciting. Everything sounds critical. They've got a really good way of making you feel like if you look away for one moment, you've missed the whole thing. And if you come with us, we'll introduce you to that sort of that state of just permanent excitement.
That was Emily Maitlis. You can join her, John and Anthony on Americast, and you will find that wherever you normally get your podcasts. And that really is it from us for now, but there will be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. If you would like to comment on this one or the topics we've covered, you know what to do. Send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Jackie Leonard, and until next time, goodbye.
Capital One has a fresh take on banking. Now you can open a new savings account in about 5 minutes and earn five times the national average. Banking with Capital One means five times the savings toward your dream honeymoon, or five times the savings toward your family's ultimate vacation, even five times the savings toward just feeling good about saving. It's time to make your savings goals come true. This is Banking Reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One, N.A. member FDIC.